Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. Xander Schauffele is atop yet another leaderboard. He fired a course record 9-under-62 Thursday to take a three-shot lead at the PGA Championship over Tony Finau and Sahith Theegala. Xander also became the first player to record two 62s in a major championship. He also did it last year at the U.S. Open at L.A. Country Club. He also, Rex, has the lowest all-time first-round scoring average in major championship history at 69.81. What does it mean?
I mean, it means he's playing really, really well. I don't think we needed to see that out of them today, though, based on what he did last week at Quail Hollow, another major championship type of venue. And as you pointed out, the last person to shoot 62 in a major championship, which is the benchmark, was, hold on, let me check my notes. Yep, that's right. It was Xander last year at the U.S. Open. He knows how to get off to fast starts. All those things we used to say about Rory, about, oh, he struggles in the first round. He's probably putting too much pressure on himself. It seems like Xander is the exact opposite. And what we're seeing is the fruits of all that labor. We've touched on the idea of the work that he's done with Chris Como. It has paid off in spades. I spoke with some folks from Callaway this afternoon because I was trying to figure out, because JT, who was paired with Xander today, talked about he's impressive because he's always had a very, very even keel on the golf course. He doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. He's kind of the perfect golfer in that sense. He has a really, really good short game. The difference now, as JT pointed out, is he hits it so much longer. And when I spoke with the folks at Callaway, they said, if you look at his stats, driving distance is not that much bigger year over year, not that much greater year over year. Where you see the improvements is incrementally in the ball speeds. He's picked up about 5 miles an hour in ball speed, which equates to about 10 miles an hour. I mean, which equates to 10 extra yards when he needs it, when he wants it. He's got that in reserve. And I think that's what we saw today. And you can dominate a golf course, even a major championship golf course, when you have all those tools in place.
I mean, Xander Schauffele is not and was not short. He has never been short on the PGA Tour, but he's hitting absolute seeds right now. Like you and I, it's almost breathtaking to see in person how fast the ball is coming off of his club face. It's not necessarily that high, but they're just like frozen ropes and can shape it both ways. It's extremely impressive. And he paired that on Thursday, at least, with a very hot putter. I wish I had the stats in front of me because I was on the live from desk earlier this week with Paige McKenzie, and she did an amazing breakdown of how good Xander Schauffele's putting is over the first two rounds. And then once he gets himself into contention on the weekend, how poor it tends to be. I was struck, Rex, by Xander Schauffele in his press conference on Thursday saying, but it's only Thursday. You know, this is familiar territory for him. He's been there before. I think even Xander knows that now he has to prove it when it comes to not just major championships, but
finishing.
I think just tournaments in general. Can he finish the deal? This is a great Thursday story, but I think even Xander knows that it doesn't ultimately mean all that much.
Well, and to your point, I kind of went back because I was kind of curious about the stats. You told me that Paige stat, which sounds really, really cool. And so I went back to his major championship scoring averages. And when you look at what he's done in the first round through today's round, he's got a 69.53 scoring average for round one in his major championship starts, which is really, really good when you consider these are supposed to be the hardest, most difficult test against the
best all time. Best all-time first-round scoring average.
Best all-time, but to your point, the second-round scoring average balloons to 71.85. And it gets slightly better going into the weekend, but you're still almost a stroke higher between the first round and the fourth round. And that's where the difference is going to come. We saw it last week at Quail Hollow. Got off to a great start, built a pretty good lead going into the weekend, and just slowly faded. It's not as though there wasn't a John Vandeveld moment last week for him at Quail Hollow. And to be fair, I'm not quite sure anybody could have beat Rory McIlroy when he was in full flight the way he was. And the same thing when he got into the hunt at TPC Sawgrass in March at the Players' Championship. He doesn't implode. It's just he seems to hit a speed bump and can't get back up to that blinding speed that you and I talked about. And that's where the challenge is going to come over the next few rounds. Like I said, almost two strokes higher with a round two scoring average. So tomorrow will be a telling round. You can't win a major on Friday, but whatever it is he's able to do tomorrow, and I don't expect another 62, but anything in the 60s, I think will be a good step forward for him.
you look historically what he did last year at the U.S. Open at Los Angeles Country Club after the opening round, 62 alongside Ricky Fowler. He fouled it up with a 70, ultimately finished in a tie for 10th. I think the big difference this week, and we can talk about the golf course if you really want to, Rex, it's not, that's not going to be anywhere good enough. Like, I, Xander's advantage right now is 3 shots. I think by the time he tees off at 2 o'clock on Friday, he could easily be caught by some of the pursuers. The golf course is continues to be very soft. I was actually surprised scoring actually wasn't better in the afternoon wave, but the golf course is already soft. We are expected to get more showers, maybe even a couple of thunderstorms rolling in. That's just going to make the golf course even more scoreable. I would anticipate that this is going to be a shootout. We're looking 15 to 20 under par. I think that benefits Xander, where in the past, I think he's probably been a little bit too tentative on the weekend. He knows he's going to have to keep the throttle down and continue to be aggressive and not fall into the trap that I think he has in the past, where he's maybe a little bit timid on the weekend. Speaking of those pursuers, Rex, what else stood out to you from the opening round here at Valhalla?
No disrespect to Xander, but I feel like you kind of buried the lead, because what we have on day one is a really, really cool leaderboard. And look, that the set, you know, just one of 4 rounds of 62 at major championships, that's a historic, and you go into the history books. But what I'm immediately drawn to in my eye is you have Xander Schauffele, you have Tony Finau right behind him, you have Rory McIlroy, another stroke back, your boy Tom Kim came up and made a good day of it today. Colin Morikawa, Brooks Koepka is right there. We talked ad nauseum to start the season through the spring about where are the stars? What's going on? The stars aren't delivering like we need them to. The stars need to step up. The stars are stepping up. If you look at what's going on right now on that leaderboard, if you think about the opportunities we have for the weekend, you're right. We could see a flip in the morning, and this is going to be based a lot on how the weather impacts play, because my guess is we may end up with some stoppages tomorrow, but we could see somebody maybe tied for the lead by the time he tees off. And it's probably going to be one of those big names that I just rattled off. And so I'm excited about what's to come over the next 54 holes.
Yeah, there really hasn't been any player who, you know, heading into the week, you thought had a chance to win this golf tournament who shot himself out of it on day one. John Rahm rallied. It looked like he was going to literally explode. Like his head might be blown to smithereens.
It'd be a murder homicide, wouldn't it?
And instead, he comes in with a 1-under 70. If you're keeping track at home, Wyndham Clark, who was playing a little bit erratically over the past couple weeks, came in with an even par round of 71. Tiger Woods, who none of us thought would win or even contend in this tournament, did come in with a 72. I'm with you. And so that's why I'll take the conversation then to Rory as a player who stood out. I think it's obvious, even in his 5-under 66, that he did not have his best stuff. Rory McIlroy ranked 134th off the tee strokes gained. That is incredibly un-Rory-like. Hit just half the fairways, hit just 10 of 18 greens in regulation. And despite what our friend Jason Sobel of SiriusXM asked him after the round, I actually thought Rory, having followed him on his second nine, got quite a bit out of his round. He had a lot of momentum-saving par putts. He made 3 birdies in a row on his 14th, 15th, and 16th holes of the day. One of them he flagged a wedge shot. Another one he chipped in for birdie after incredibly lucky to stay up and not drop into the bunker. And then on the par 5 seventh, his 16th hole of the day, I hit a great little nipped pitch shot for another birdie. What was your takeaway on Rory's round? Do you think anything that you saw today leads you to believe he can or cannot win this championship?
He can. He absolutely 100% can. And to your point about his driving, he gave up more strokes today, which was about 1.25 shots, than he has all season long. Certainly when you compare to what he did last week with the driver, it felt like it was night and day. I don't think that's the status quo for the rest of the 3 rounds. I just don't think he continues to do that, because when he's hitting the ball that well, and we've seen it before in these runs where the last time we were here, he had just won a PGA Tour event, the WGC up at Bridgestone. He had just won the Open Championship, and he had done it in dominant fashion with the driver. And he gets on those runs, and I really feel like right now he is firing up one of those runs. So I would expect him to be a little bit more freed up tomorrow, a little bit more aggressive with the driver. He clearly came into this week probably distracted, probably a lot of things going on in his life outside.
Probably. Probably distracted.
I'm assuming. We haven't talked to him about it. We weren't allowed to ask him questions about it. That was from the PG of America during his press conference on Wednesday. So I'm only guessing that he was distracted. So to get through today, as he pointed out, it was a scrappy round. But to get through today and still be right there in the hunt, I didn't see anything that leads me to believe that he still can't win this.
Yeah, definitely a different vibe inside the ropes. I was not in Charlotte. You were not in Charlotte. Just watching on TV, that was the Rory of kind of circa 2014, where he was bouncing, he was strutting, full of confidence, just kind of oozing jock swagger. That's not the Rory that we saw on Thursday at the PGA Championship. Spent a lot of time by himself, looked deep in thought. I'm not saying that that's portends anything for the rest of the week, but I do notice a significant contrast from the Rory we saw Sunday in Charlotte versus the Rory that we saw Thursday here in Kentucky. How about Scottie Scheffler? Rex comes in with a 4-under 67. I followed him on his back nine. And to me, watching that up close, it was a perfect example of what I say when I talk about Scottie's range of outcomes being so predictable. I think this round easily could have been 64 or 65, but he was never in danger of being worse than 69. And I walked the back nine with him. He missed a 5-footer on 10. He 3-put it on 14. He didn't capitalize on the par 5 18th. And yet here he is, 5 shots back of Xander Schauffele and heading straight to the driving range to make sure it's even tidier for his second round, which begins in 12 hours or so.
And just didn't even talk to the media. Just touched base, did an interview with ESPN, and then moved along to go work with Randy Smith. And look, he normally does that. There's no alarm bells there. You and I both know that. I will say it is curious for you to say that, because he opened his round by holing out from the fairway. So he was 2 under par in one hole, and then the other 17 he managed to be 2 under par. So it's not as though it was normal. It was the normal dominant Scottie Scheffler that we saw. And I think it's fair to say that, yeah, there's probably some rust involved here, given the fact he's had some time off. There was probably, I need to catch up. I need to get back into, I think Tiger Woods called it after his round tonight, to get back into competitive flow. And that's probably where he's at right now. I would imagine that this golf course was as gettable as it's going to be all week long. And so he's probably a little disappointed given the fact that he's still 5 shots off the lead. So I don't know if there's anything fundamentally wrong, because he goes to the range after every round pretty much. And so it's not like we can sit here and say, oh, there's something going on. He had to run to the range with Randy Smith. Nope, that's not the case at all.
There's nothing fundamentally wrong. He is leading the field in strokes gained, yep, to degree, in large part because of how well he drove the golf ball.
If he'd gone
absolutely on a rope.
Yeah. If he would have gone straight to the putting green and Phil Kenyon was there, maybe we could have had a different conversation. But this is his cool down. This is how he clears his head before he goes back to the room and gets ready for tomorrow. And he has the quick turnaround, as you pointed out. Like, he'll go early tomorrow. The greens will be perfect. You and I both were taken by the idea that the majority of the low scoring, including Xander 62, came in the morning wave. And there was only a handful of players that came from the afternoon wave. Tom Kim, Scottie Scheffler was in that mix, Thomas Dietrich. And there was no reason behind it. It's not as though the wind came up. It rained a little bit, just a touch, but just enough to keep the moisture in the greens. A splash, let's call it, just a dollop. And to keep the moisture in the greens. So it's not as though it firmed up. There was no wind. I mean, the only explanation, I heard a couple players talk about that, yeah, the greens got a little chewed up over the course of the day. And so that probably made making putts a little bit more difficult. But now you flip that side, and let's say that, okay, the world number one, who's won 4 out of his last 5 starts and is as rested as anyone in the field, gotta still like his chances.
I mean, that's the only reasonable explanation. Scottie Scheffler made less than 50 feet worth of putts in his opening round while playing in the afternoon wave. Yes, you can tap down spike marks that you couldn't before, but as the afternoon wears on, the greens get a little bit hairier, they get a little bit bumpier, they get a little bit slower. I don't think they were scaring players this morning either, but this afternoon I did not see a whole lot of putts being made. How about the defending champion, Rex? Brooks Koepka turning in a 4-under 67. King Brooks did not have much cooking until an eagle on the par 5 7th, his 16th hole of the day, and followed up with a birdie on 8 to get in at a 67. Anything from Brooks's round stand out to you as he looks ahead to the second round in the afternoon on Friday?
This is going to be part of my hit tonight for Live From alongside Todd Lewis. I miss you, by the way, this week in Live From. I miss you so much. Like, you and I We have so much fun together. No one's clamoring for us to be together, but I do miss being side by side with you in the big chair without adult supervision. It's always one of the most enjoyable parts of the week. But I'm with Todd tonight, and one of those hits will be on Brooks Koepka. So I'm gonna try to. I'm gonna do a dry run on this.
Dry run.
Yeah, this is what I was thinking, because the narrative is with Brooks Koepka is that he can magically flip that switch. We've talked about it a lot when it comes to the major championships, that he sort of has a gear that we haven't really seen from a player of this caliber before. He just shows up and he does special things. But during his press conference today, he used the word patient 6 times. And he kind of dug into the...
He kept being asked about it. It was so annoying.
He did, but I did like his answer. Like, normally he's kind of hard to pry anecdotes out of. So for someone who carries a notebook and has to talk in 90-second clips about him, it's kind of difficult. It's kind of demanding. But on this front, he actually said that that's what he kind of had to learn early in his career when it came to how do you play well in major championships, and it's to be patient. And he said he learned a lot from Graham McDowell and playing alongside DJ early in his career, because he admitted he's not a patient person by nature, that when it comes to his life, there's nothing patient about him. So he really had to pick up something. He gave an anecdote about playing with DJ one year at the WGC back, the old WGC at Doral, where he said DJ was just kind of chipping out of the woods and he hit a cart path and essentially went right back to the same spot. And he goes, his blood was boiling, but he looked over at DJ and DJ was just laughing. And you realize that it's just one hole. Like, you just have to calm down. And you have to understand that it's 72 holes. It's 4 days. There's a lot that's going to happen. Some of it's going to be good. Some of it's going to be bad. But you have to move along with it. And I think he's probably embraced that better than anyone in the game. And I think today's round is a really good example of that, that he wasn't hitting it particularly close. He wasn't playing. I mean, he wasn't putting particularly well. But he did what he does in the majors, and that's stay patient and stay right there in the hunt.
Folks, what do you think?
Do I have to clean that up?
Is that what Rex should go with this evening? He's got about an hour to clean it up. One point that I would make is that I don't think that this style of test really suits Brooks Koepka's game any longer. Yes, 2 of his 5 major championships have come when the winning score was 16 under par, but he has always prided himself on kind of being that smash mouth player who can just kind of outlast you, where he's, you know, he and Ricky Elliott do such a great job of mapping out the golf course, always missing on the correct side. That's always a huge point of emphasis. Never really getting himself in trouble, never making double bogeys. This is not going to be that sort of test at the PGA Championship. Again, I think it's one of the criticisms of this golf course is that there's really not that much trouble in terms of where can you possibly make a double bogey? Where can you make a triple bogey? Yes, you can make a bogey if you miss a tee shot in a bunker and it fails to get up and down. But I don't think there's a whole lot of volatility that's possible. That means Brooks Koepka is going to have to go deep. And that's not his comfort zone historically in the major championships. It's been, you know, when he won back in 2017 at Erin Hills, that's a golf course that we've never seen before for a U.S. Open. When he outlasted Tiger at Belrive in 2018, that was 6 years ago at an entirely different body for Brooks Koepka. I think that is concerning if you think that Brooks Koepka can defend his title this week. I think Xander Schauffele has proven over his career that he can put together a lot of low numbers, and he can do so consecutively and concurrently. Brooks Koepka's birdie count, I think, is something to monitor over the next couple of days. I just don't know if he quite packs the same firepower as some of the players he's going to have to catch.
And I would agree with that. But I would also point, if we're going to make that argument, that Rory McIlroy would probably be on the other side of that coin, where he has played his best major championships on soft, wet tracks, where hitting it 330 yards is a huge advantage, and where 15, 16, 17 under par is the winning score. So, yes, I see what you're saying, and certainly there would be a reason. That would be a reason to look at Brooks and probably roll your eyes a little bit. However, he's still Brooks, man. And I'm not willing to do that after one round and he's just 5 shots back.
Yeah, I think it's just something to point out. You may want to finesse that into your answer if you really want to dazzle the viewers.
I'm doing 3 notes. I don't have that kind of time. I'm doing a note on Xander and Brooks and Victor, man. I got a lot going on. I'm throwing your boy Trackman Maestro out there.
That's a great segue, because I did want to mention Victor Hovland as one of the revelations of this PGA Championship. Yes, it was just a 368. Yes, he was still ranked 30th in strokes gained tee to green, but Victor Hovland, newsflash, has reunited with his old swing coach, Joe Mayo, formerly known as the Trackman Maestro, who was the player who elevated, or at least helped elevate, Victor Hovland last year to unprecedented heights, at least for his career, becoming a FedEx Cup champion, becoming a Ryder Cup hero, becoming arguably, I would say, by November, the best player in the world. Victor has never really discussed the reasons why they broke off that relationship. But when they did late last year, it has sent Victor down a rabbit hole of golf instruction and different swing theories and methods that, quite frankly, have not proven very successful. Joe Mayo is now Victor's third swing coach this year, behind Grant Waite. He briefly reunited with Dana Dahlquist as well around the Masters. And now, last week, Victor Hovland reached back out to Joe Mayo and started working with him. Victor said it was a quick fix, that Joe Mayo is such a smart guy, got him back in the same swing feels that he had late last year. He started seeing some improvement on the golf course, on the range as well. Last week at Quail Hollow, he had his best ball striking stats of the year, even if he finished outside the top 20. Still, do you think this Rex could be a breakthrough for Victor Hovland going back to an old source?
It's a breakthrough already. I don't know how the rest of the week plays out, but just the idea that he had done nothing since last fall, when I would argue was the most dominant player on the planet. Now he'd gotten to fourth in the world, but during that stretch when he won back-to-back playoff events and he looked like going into the Ryder Cup, he was going to be the star of that Ryder Cup. To get from there to where he is now after the struggles he's had this year, I would already say it's a breakthrough week for him. Looking at his stats, I don't know if he's 100% there. And this would I'm not quite sure. Like, we're going to have to figure this out. Like, we have a really crack research team, so I'm going to put them on this. This would be historic if he was able to do this, because I'm not quite sure, but I'm going to go on a limb and say that if he were to win this major championship, he would be the first player to do it who was the last player on the range on Wednesday night. I don't believe that's ever happened before. I'm kidding, folks. Please be easy with the comments.
Please, there's not actually a stat on that. But I mean, we were preparing for our live from hits on Wednesday night. It was after 6 p.m. For sure. And Victor was still on the range, not with Joe Mayo, but just his caddy, Shay Knight. I strongly encourage everyone to go read Kevin Van Valkenburg, a phenomenal writer who writes now for No Laying Up. He did a deep profile and told countless anecdotes of Victor staying on the range until his hands bled, until he ran out of tees, until his TrackMan ran out of battery to need to go get charged. I mean, this is who he is. And in the feature story that I wrote around the Masters, and a TV feature as well about Victor Hovland, like, his curiosity is part of who he is. His inquisitiveness has led him to get to this point where he's one of the best players in the world. It's inarguable that it has cost him at least a little bit. You know, that curiosity has sidetracked him, has distracted him, has derailed some of his momentum. I think that's clearly the case in this instance. Yes, in the big picture, it'll be 5 or 6 months of his career, but I'm pretty confident once he's reuniting now with Joe Mayo, I think Victor Hovland can get back on the right track, and I think he can get back on the right track rather quickly.
I'm so distracted. I'm watching Johnson Wagner do his thing tonight on Live From, and I can't hear the sound, but it looks like he's actually trying to shank a chip shot.
Who shanked a chip shot today?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what Johnson is doing. I love what he does on Live From. You and I have talked endlessly about this. I strongly encourage everyone to watch, because he's part of a show that's very serious, as it should be. But he is, and I don't want to call him the comic relief, but he's certainly a different side of that show.
Dose of levity, you might say.
Sure. Have fun with it. Oh, now he hits another bad one. Or maybe he's not trying to hit bad ones. Maybe he's just hitting bad ones.
I think that's going to do it. We've already gone, Rex, as we typically do, 5 to 10 minutes longer than we wanted to on these mini pods in the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav. So we'll put a pin at it, and we'll reconvene 24 hours from now after the second round of the PGA Championship, assuming, of course, there are no weather delays here at Valhalla. In the meantime, you guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for all latest news, notes, updates from the PGA Championship. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Talk to you guys on Friday night.
Court like my take.